Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with CulturePop's Matt Armitage. We talk a lot about the future and how it's going to look like. And I came across an article on New Scientist that really kind of speaks about actually the future that we always talk about in terms of the cashless society and going out everywhere with our phones and we can do everything with our phones is actually in China. And this is a fascinating article about how China is kind of showing off the rest of the world on how to build a cashless society, because cash is rapidly becoming a thing of the past now, and consumers have kind of like abandoned banknotes in favor of paying with their phones. And this is not something China is doing alone, because we know, I've been to Sweden before.
Yes, exactly. And you could literally couldn't give your money away.
It is. I came back with the exact same amount of banknotes that I left Malaysia with, and that's because everywhere I go, they just don't accept cash. But what they do is they do accept cards. In China, however, they don't just accept cards, they accept all these QR codes payment.
Yeah, it's all off your phone, right? Mobile wallets.
It's insane. Yeah, so like this Alipay, WeChat Pay, they're all using it at this point of time. And these are the two most popular apps, and they're kind of like ubiquitous at this point of time. You can use it in restaurants, shops, metro stations, even beggars on the street put up a QR code.
Yeah, exactly. Beggars and buskers can put up a QR code and have money transferred to them. I mean, you can see the utility of it, but when you look at the bigger picture, when you look at things like the social credit system that China is trying to put into place, you can also see that this becomes a system of control as well.
Yeah.
Because it becomes about giving you access to money. If you've got money in your pocket, nobody can, you know, somebody can like literally come up to you and hit you and take it away from you. But you can't have an authority or whatever saying you don't have a right to spend that money.
Yeah.
So you have these issues around privacy and freedom that are very much linked to these kind of digital transactions. So we do need to have a very robust system and set of protections.
And actually, the country is scrambling to find, you know, ways that they can keep up with the boom, because they're quite open with their own startups trying to, you know, utilize this boom of the mobile world and the e-commerce space and the e-wallets and stuff. But they are trying to, you know, come up with e-commerce law to sort of help protect the consumers on the legal protection when they buy things through the e-commerce apps or social media. One of the interviews they had with a doctor who lives in Shanghai says he hasn't used cash in more than 2 years.
Yeah.
And that for me is going like, oh, wow, that's a bit creepy and a bit chilling to think like you've never used cash for 2 years. You're always just using your phone to pay for stuff.
But also I think it's the same guy. He actually keeps most of his savings, not in a traditional bank, but in a savings account with Alipay, because the interest
is higher.
Yeah, which is fine. But again, that comes back to that thing where you need a lot of protections, because we've seen in the past, certainly in Western countries, that people who keep their money with, say, smaller banking institutions or banking institutions that aren't as protected by the central bank of the companies, we've seen those things crashing and people losing their life savings and that kind of thing. So I'm not throwing any doubt onto the credentials of Alipay. I think, you know, it's a very big company. I think it's a reputable company. But if you are putting your savings into these digital institutions, you want to know that they have the same kind of protections and safeguards that traditional banks have for looking after and preserving your money.
Yeah, because like going back to your MSP just earlier on, like it only takes another sort of company to come up and say that, you know, if you save your money with our e-wallet service provider, it will give you better rate than Alipay and WeChat Pay. And then there will be some people who will jump on board
Yeah. And also, you know, you can find sometimes with these things that there will be penalties on removing your money
and you're
moving
locked
it
in.
Around and you become locked in. Yeah, so then again, you know, you become part of the system.
Yeah, also payments are kind of validated using fingerprints, PIN or face recognition. And one of the quotes that came out from this article is that, you know, it's not good enough just stealing someone's phone now. If you want to steal money, you got to actually steal the face. You got to steal fingerprints.
And that's very true. But that is also where it comes back to those safeguards on privacy, because that same thing can be used to block you from having access. Because if suddenly somebody decides that, no, we don't want you spending money, they can simply block your PIN or your facial scan or whatever. So, you know, there's two sides to this kind of argument.
More points to your argument that we are robots because, you know, like you mentioned, right, it's pointing towards the Chinese government piloting its social credit system where it looks at accessing the citizens' economic and social circumstances and kind of linked with payment and what you can do between your credit score.
And linking it to your perceived good behavior, whatever that good behavior might be.
And apparently in Alipay's Sesame Credit is the first to sort of popularize this concept. It gives individual credit rating based on transactions and other information. So users with high scores receive benefits such as being able to rent a bike without paying a deposit. So, you know, this is just really small, really tiny, but you know what the government's trying to do, though.
Precisely. And also it goes back to that idea of a society that rewards rich people for being rich and penalizes poorer people for being poor, which is just insane.
All right, fine. We're robots. I get it now, right? Okay. also, very quickly, just before we go on to the break, I'm a big video gamer, and this story came out on Futurism is something that I'm like celebrating. The inner kid in me is just super, happy because I grew up playing simulation games, whether it's Gran Turismo, and then I had an Xbox for a while, and I played Forza Motorsports, and then of course there's the Microsoft Flight Simulator that I got hooked on for a long time. I even play things like Train Simulator, which a lot of people are like, how difficult can that be? You're on a track and you're, you know, just...
Yeah, isn't it just go and stop?
Well, it's more like that's a lot more things to do, to be done conductor, right?
Stay awake.
Yeah.
Go stop, stay awake. Awesome game.
Yeah, so anyways, video games and simulators, they're getting super realistic at this point of time. And recently, a video game pro beat a Formula One driver in a race that they had over the weekend without decades of a real-world racing experience. In a shocking victory, it left commentators speechless. So this 23-year-old Enzo Bonito, which, by the way, he already has a Formula One driver name.
Yeah, I know. He really does sound like a champion, right?
Yeah. He beat Lucas Di Grassi. He's an Formula E and also an ex-Formula One driver on a track in Mexico. And this is just a fascinating story on how these games are getting so popular. In esports, there's a lot of money being thrown in esports, like $100 million in a Fortnite tournament last year. If I'm not mistaken, though, one day, or you know, I'm sure within this year, we will have one racing sports esports competition that will be a better payout than being an actual Formula One driver.
I wouldn't be surprised because the costs are so much lower as well, so you can afford to give people a much bigger prize. But you know, we have to look at stories like this and ask if they're a little bit misleading because, you know, as it is, Enzo Bonito, like you said, he sounds like a racing driver. So is he simply someone who would have been a fantastic Formula One driver but didn't have the money to get into that sport and instead went into esports? You know, is that an innate talent or are we saying that anyone who's big in the games would then be able to translate that into the real world skill? So we'd need a bigger sample size to do that. But it is still an incredible...
Yeah, don't burst my bubble here, right? Because I'm saying I have some skills, all right?
No, I'm just saying I think this Enzo guy,
he would have
been a fantastic driver.
Yeah. It's just probably really expensive. It is actually really expensive.
Motorsports is colossally expensive for most people to get into because, you know, you need a car that you break.
And you got to start off really young, like 6 or 5 years, 6 year olds. You got to start go-karting. How many parents would be able to afford to send their kids on go-karting, you know, at such a young age and on in the competitive way as well?
Especially when you start off in like the Formula 2000s and the lower ranks where you don't have sponsorship and everything has to be footed out of your own pocket. So fantastic accomplishment for this
good guy,
however.
Yeah, so over the weekend, play some games. That's the message I'm giving out to you, everyone. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Busy following Money Trail. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sander, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Let's continue with King of Culture.
Well, I do have something from the crowd this week, but it's not quite what you think. This is the Gecko Wave. It is the pairable stereo Bluetooth speaker with a twist, but it's not actually the product I'm interested in. Mm. It's the video that they've come up with to advertise the product. Now, the product itself is, you know, one of the, you know, it's a Bluetooth
speaker. It is a Bluetooth speaker, yeah.
It's got a magnetic thing to attach to your fridge. It's got this long taily thing so that you can wrap it around the handlebars of your bike or whatever. If you bring two of them together,
they become stereo.
They become stereo.
All right.
You know, it's your bog standard Bluetooth speaker. Yeah. But the video to promote it is absolutely fantastic. They've done a spoof of being in Finland. They've taken that idea of Finnish people being quite dour. And it is one of the funniest things that I've seen in a very, very long time. So you have all of these very strangely dressed people who are having picnics and whatever. Describing it really doesn't give it justice at all. But then it kind of descends into the kind of Finnish black metal, death metal kind of thing. But all of it without losing this very kind of vanilla kind of feel to everyone. And the guy they've got narrating it is just absolutely fantastic. This guy should get a show of his own. So my culture pick for this week is actually the video for the Gecko Wave, the pairable Bluetooth speaker with a twist.
Oh, hello. Everyone thinks us Finnish people can't have any fun. That's not true. We love a good Schwanelstock. And we enjoy a good picnic. And no picnic is complete without some music. But I never know where to put the speaker, so I can hear the music from everywhere. And it's always in mono. Not fun. Thank Ukko, our Lord and Savior, for Gecko Wave. It is a 360 sound Bluetooth speaker with a flexible tail that can hang anywhere. Here it is on a tree. Here it is on the table. Here on bicycle. Here it's on me. So much fun. The fun becomes even funner when you connect two Gecko Waves. With two Gecko Waves, the speakers synchronize and you get a stereo sound. Here are two waves making stereo in trees. Here on table. Here on bike. Here on me again. Fun! Wave also has a magnetic back if you want to stick it on a fridge or other metal objects like the metal plate in my friend Milos's head. I shouldn't laugh, he got it in a war.
Bluetooth, that is Matt's pick for King of Culture. Amazing. Times have changed indeed. Let's go on with another story about how we're just sort of faking everything these days. Now you don't have to sort of, you know, if you have a partner in this Valentine's Day, you probably don't have to stare in the sky hoping for a shooting star to cross by, because there will be an artificial shooting star that will be created in Japan. There's a Japanese company that is looking into making this. And I just feel like, you know what, I saw the video of this.
Yeah,
it's absolutely beautiful. It's amazing.
No, but just to interrupt you for a second, listeners might be thinking, why on earth would someone put something in space to simulate shooting stars which come from space?
Apparently there's a belief that if you see a shooting star, your wish comes true. And, you know, we just need some hope and positivity in life, right?
It's the idea of having the shooting stars on cue. Again, this is like watching the fire festival, right?
It's
like, and at 11:43, we will have a demonstration of shooting stars.
Yeah. Actually, it's exactly like that. It's a multicolored array of artificial shooting stars. Some orange, others green, others blue. They will blaze in Japan's night sky. And this display is what AILCO, which is a Tokyo-based space venture company, plans to realize using small-sized satellites. Shooting stars are actually space dust. And as the dust enters the Earth's atmosphere at incredible speed, it obviously furiously collides with molecules in the atmosphere and it generates intense heat, which is is why they glow. The world's first artificial shooting star show is planned for spring 2020. So make your way down to Japan if you want to make your proposals and you want to make your wish come true.
Yeah. What I like about the story is actually the long-term effect of it, which is that what they're planning to do is actually to harvest the stuff for the stars from debris in space. So they're going to have a big magnet on the machine and it will actually pick up bits of defunct satellites. So when you look at it on the surface, it's a bit silly because you're sending something up to do this artificial shooting star demonstration. But in the future, it will actually be fueled by debris that's already in space. And so they will be clearing up our outer solar system or outer orbit or whatever, and making some money in the process. Mm.
Now, very quickly, I would love to spend more time on this story, but we're kind of running out of time. But I do want to mention this because Google has put an additional $3.1 million into Wikipedia and bringing its total contribution to about $7.5 million US dollars. Now, a little over a third of those funds will go towards sustaining the current efforts at the Wikimedia Foundation, the nonprofit that runs Wikipedia. And the remaining $2 million will focus on the long-term viability through the organization's endowment. Google will also be allowing Wikipedia editors to use several of its machine learning tools for free, which then leads to the reason why this is actually super common sense for Google to invest in this, because Wikipedia is the information hub.
Well, exactly. I mean, the idea that giving them a few million is...
Peanuts.
It's peanuts. They could be funding
Wikipedia. Actually, Google could just go and
they
like...
Could just, they could be giving it $100 million a year. And, you know, that's just chump change to them. Because how many searches online are for things on Wikipedia that go through Google? How much business is Wikipedia giving to Google? I honestly think they should be giving far more. Yeah,
because supporting Wikipedia is a shrewd business decision that will likely to benefit Google for years to come. Because, for example, when you search for Paris in Google, there's a knowledge panel that will come up.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything comes up with, you know, information
from Wikipedia.
Yeah, so exactly. And this is, again, Google's just going to learn from Wikipedia. They're going to learn because Wikipedia is using Google's tools, AI tools, to, you know, be better
model
at their knowledge.
And
different languages,
they're
looking at that as well. So... Come on, Google. Give more to Wikipedia. That's just chump change.
Yeah.
What do we have for Geek Tunes, Matt?
We have two of my favorite people. We have Karen O from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and we have the celebrity producer Danger Mouse. Now, they've teamed up. They're coming up with a new album. This is one of the first singles they've put out. This is Woman by Karen O and Danger Mouse.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.